Hello, everyone, and welcome to Locked on Cavaliers, your look at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting and dramatic Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and The Step Back. Today's show is a recap of the Cavs' win over the Indiana Pacers. They win Game 7, 105-101. If you want the Pacers side of it, I would highly recommend going and checking out what Adam Friedman and Tony East are doing at Locked on Pacers. This game had a bunch of ins and outs. My guest on the show is Ashley Bastock. She is a editor with me at FearTheSword.com and a writer for NEO Sports Insiders, but find her on Twitter at AshleyBastock42. But today's show will give you everything you need to know about that series and what is to come for a little bit of a tease with Cavs-Raptors in the second round. Full preview up tomorrow with Sean Woodley from Locked on Raptors, who you've heard on this program before. But here's today's show, and thanks for listening.
You are Locked on Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, Cavs escape 105-101, and escape's putting a little bit dramatically, but they were up by 14 in this game in the first half, were holding on in the third quarter a little bit when the Pacers went on a run, as they've done all series, and the Cavs end up winning this game behind LeBron James's 45 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, Tristan Thompson 15-10, Kevin Love 14 points, George Hill had a really big second half. A whole bunch of guys contributed to this game, but actually LeBron James was chief among them. Just again dominant, again, but again dealing with fatigue, just looked like he was worn down, said he was burnt after the game, and just saying he's burnt out. How good was LeBron in this game, and just what did it mean for the Cavs to get another performance like this from LeBron at a time where they really, really needed it?
Yeah, this was like the ultimate LeBron performance, and, you know, when I did the preview for Fear the Sword for I think I said in my prediction for this game that the Cavs would win, but it was going to be by like 3 points and LeBron would drop 50 because he's going to have to. Without his performance today, I don't see how they win, considering in the first half, really only him and Tristan Thompson looked like they had any signs of life offensively. And obviously, if he doesn't perform like this, like the way he's done this entire series, I think the Cavs get eliminated, and they get eliminated in fewer than 7 games. So, you know, obviously, I feel like you can never say enough about LeBron, but what you do say about LeBron is always going to feel like it's not enough praise, given that all he does physically and mentally and, you know, the levels that he takes this team. Obviously, like in February, he averaged a triple-double, the first time he's done that for an entire month in his career. And we've seen him take things up to another gear, which is insane when you also add in the fact that he's in his 15th season. So, you know, you can't say enough about LeBron tonight, but really just in this entire series so far.
It was interesting, too, to see how they adjusted using him a little bit, because George Hill's insertion at this game in the second half when things were getting a little bit rudderless before they lost that lead, I think, and before things kind of got back under control for them. He was the only ball handler, really, in that first half. You saw him setting up Kevin Love, setting up J.R. Smith, setting up Kyle Korver. But in the second half, you saw him get back in the post a little bit. I think maybe not quite as much to start the half, but he wasn't the only one initiating things. They ran that George Hill LeBron pick and roll, where he was getting switches and just getting the looks he wanted. And then you saw him also on that play late where Kyle Korver threw that bullet pass to him, and LeBron had the lane where he beat Bogdanovich backdoor. What did I think the things that we like cannot say enough about LeBron is that it's just so hard to find teams that have options for him. And I don't know exactly how to think about this or how to really kind of run through it in my head, but I wonder how the Cavs would fare against a team that's maybe built like Indiana, but has a guy that that just for whatever reason they have that unicorn that can physically match LeBron a little bit better than Bogdanovich, than Thad Young could. If this was Indiana, if Indiana played like this year and they had Paul George and maybe like they still have Oladipo or something, like whatever reality, I wonder how the Cavs would have handled the team that could have put some more effort into slowing LeBron, because, bless his heart, Bogdan Bogdanovic had no shot. I tweeted this in the game. He was fouling LeBron so much, but like he's just not as strong, so he was bouncing off LeBron. Got Sabonis and Miles Turner got absolutely smoked, and bless his heart, Lance Stephenson thinks he can guard LeBron James, but he was backing up to give LeBron space in that cushion this whole series, and just physically just obviously cannot guard that guy in the poster and can't hang with him on the perimeter either. It's so clear that I think the big takeaway as we go forward is that this is a team that is going to be relying on LeBron to take them places, especially if George Hill is limited for whatever reason, and if Kevin Love doesn't play better. And we'll talk about Kevin Love a little bit more, but if those two guys, I think in particular, are not playing well, then it a lot does end up falling on LeBron. And I think even when those guys are having better games and can support him in the right moments, it still took over 40 points for LeBron James for the Cavs to get out of there with a pretty thin win.
Yeah, and after the game, it was funny in the locker room, what you're saying, just that he affects the offense in so many different ways. And when Kyle Korver was talking, he brought up, this story with Allen Iverson about, Iverson used to say, do you know how much energy it takes just to put up 30 shots? Like, and that's basically what LeBron did tonight. He was 16 of 25 from the field. Like, that alone, like, he accounted for, 25 of their 74 field goal attempts. That's just crazy in and of itself from an energy standpoint. And, there's been a lot of talk about how exhausted he looked at the podium and sounded at the podium after the game. And it's kind of no wonder when you look at those numbers. But, overall, it's pretty obvious what you were saying. Like, Indiana's downfall in this series was always going to be that they did not have somebody that can stop LeBron. Like, yeah, for as great as Victor Oladipo was at moments in this game, and for as great as some of the role players were in different games during this series, there never was going to be that person that, like you said, you need a unicorn or somebody that is gifted in different ways on an opposing team to stop him, especially come playoff time. And obviously, over the last 3 years, the only team we've seen really do that is Golden State. And even then, they have, a system that is kind of a unicorn, an offense, the whole system that is a unicorn, more so than one particular player that's a quote-unquote LeBron stopper.
Yeah, absolutely agreed on that. I also think it's just LeBron to talk. You're not going to hear from him on the show. His post game was like grouchy LeBron, and it wasn't like grouchy because I think they played bad. I think he actually, all things considered, seemed pretty happy with the win. He was smiling a lot during this game. If you were watching, just kind of playing body language doctor from your couch, or if you're at the game or something, but he said, I'm burnt. I can't even think about Toronto right now. One of the things to look going forward is just, what is LeBron's energy level? It's going to be one of the big stories for this Cavs team going forward. They play that series that we're going to cover all this week on the show is going to start on Tuesday in Toronto. So the Cavs are going to get one day off. They're going to have to fly there tomorrow. So he basically just has to fly right on turn to get there. They're going to play again on Thursday. Then they, even coming back to Cleveland, they don't get that extra day. They're playing again on Saturday before Monday. So there's just not a lot of time, I think, for LeBron to get some rest, just because the series went seven games. It's one of the things I think he's really benefited from the last couple of years, and I'm sure he would say this to some degree too, but he needs that extra time frame is really going to matter, especially if he keeps having to do all this. Like, he can only sit as godlike as he is in year 15 and how just insane this guy is. I'm sure he's going to look fresh, in game one of the second round against the Raptors. It's just a lot to ask of him, but the two guys, I think, in this game that I would say had surprising efforts because of and the ways they made a difference were sort of surprising were George Hill and Tristan Thompson. Actually, as the guest on the show, I'm going to let you pick your own adventure. Which one of them would you like to talk about first, Tristan Thompson or George Hill?
We can go the Tristan Thompson route first, I think.
So he was excellent in this game, an unexpected starter. I got the vibe from Ty Lue's pregame press conference that there was going to be some kind of lineup switch. I didn't know what it was. Thompson makes a lot of sense, though, but his night, 35 minutes, where he was playing big chunks of minutes at center, 5 of 6 from the field, the 10 boards, 5 on offense, 5 on defense, the steal. He had a really emphatic block at the end of the game, was a +2 in this game, and 15 points, a double-double for him, and with a lot of that, it did come in the first quarter, but it was energetic throughout. Was a guy that was averaging 7.8 minutes a game in this series coming up to date. And Ty Lue went to this guy that he trusted, part of that 2016 title team. Four of the 5 starters in this game were from that team. Something Ty Lue said was a reason that he went with it. And Tristan Thompson, I think, played better than anyone could have expected. What stood out for him was the energy on the glass. Him and Kevin Love, and Love chipped in a lot, but him and Kevin Love combined to just hound the glass. The Cavs have a 44-37 rebounding advantage in this game. Got 15 offensive boards. Tristan did a really nice job, I think, on defense as well. And he also just took advantage of the opportunities where he had space, where he didn't take any weird jumpers. He only had the one pass that he threw out of bounds or got called for a travel on that pass out of the pick and roll, which is something we haven't seen very much from him of late when he has played. But he was hounding Miles Turner, hounding Sabonis, stayed with those guys, stayed with Trevor Booker, and handled everything that threw at him. And I think moving forward right now, he should be ahead of Larry Nance. And if he's not starting, he should be one of the first guys off the bench. I think this game showed that if Tristan could play not necessarily this great every game, but can do some of this, he deserves minutes. And it seems like he just is ready for this for whatever reason. I don't know why, but he was great in this game, and it makes you rethink him a little bit in my book.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It kind of reminded me of last year when, again, against Indiana, when Amon Shumpert hadn't been playing, and, you know, we could sort of tell in the waning weeks of the regular season, okay, he's probably not going to be in the playoff rotation. Didn't play the first half of game one, came out in the second half and did a good job of locking down Oladipo and gave them some energy. And, you know, they obviously came back to win that game based on a miss at the very end from, I think, Corey Joseph. I could be wrong. But it ended up being a kind of spark in that game that led to them sweeping. But I think Tristan kind of, obviously it's too early to tell, but what he did tonight was exactly what you needed to see from him after the rough season that he's had. Overall, he's underperformed compared to what they need him to, especially rebounding-wise. So I think him, like you said, I think the rebounding was the biggest thing as far as energy goes. I think that early pick and roll action that he has with LeBron. Ty mentioned when Indiana was switching things, and he had smaller guards on him, that he was able to really get into a rhythm on the offensive glass that way. So I definitely, you know, agree with you at this point about him being ahead of Larry Nance Jr. in the rotation. And with the lineup change pregame, to me, it just kind of seemed like, for better or for worse, Ty is now sticking with these guys that are battle tested, the core that is left from that 2016 championship run, and he knows what he's going to get with them. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we see Tristan moving up in that rotation. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a 6th man off the bench, even if he doesn't start in the next series.
Worth noting, the other guys that he trusts right now, George Hill's a veteran who was part of a good Jazz team last year, has battled LeBron in the playoffs before. So even if he hasn't gone through those battles with the Cavs and with LeBron and with Ty, George Hill's been there before. Ty knows Jeff Green, for better or for worse, and a lot of times it's for worse. And Kyle Korver was on the finals team last year, and yes, he wasn't on there for the whole season, but he's run through this before. So the core of this team, the guys that are playing a lot of the minutes, are guys that have been through some of this. To look at George Hill, look fantastic in this game. I don't know about you, but I did not think we were going to see him at all once he didn't play in the first half, didn't start. I wasn't surprised he didn't start, but I was surprised that we ended up getting him, and I was surprised that he played the 19 minutes in a row he did in the second half. And you saw everything about George Hill that I think is valuable. He got in these little, he had a little shoving to be physical with guys. His length, helped give them another option on Oladipo. He knew where to go on defense. And I think the most important thing, it's something Ty has talked a lot about, It's that they had another ball handler with LeBron James. He was able to take some of the pressure off LeBron to do all of that. They set up that pick and roll very nicely. They were able to get the switches, and he was able to just fill in these little gaps and played a really, really impactful 19 minutes. Ty said after the game that he was on a minutes restriction. George was pretty nonchalant about a lot of it post-game from what I heard of his post-game scrum in a very packed Cavs locker room. But I thought George Hill was great, and I think if he's good to go for game one, we don't really know that of yet. We don't have a quite clear update on how healthy his back actually is. I think he has to start, and I think he has to play a lot. I think you're looking at a situation where he, along with LeBron, along with Love, probably he's going to need to be playing 30-some minutes a night, but that it's a big question of how healthy that back is really going to be and if he's going to be moved off a minutes restriction. And if he is on a minutes restriction when the Cavs are playing Kyle Lowry and the Toronto Raptors, that's going to be interesting to see how the Cavs decide to handle that.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, for obviously the big plus with George Hill and what you saw tonight is he takes some of that pressure off LeBron. They can run some really great pick and roll sets with the two of them that makes switching kind of impossible for the imposing team because it'll really create some mismatches. It opens LeBron up. He, takes by taking pressure off of him as another ball handler, especially when teams want to pick the Cavs up full court. But then what I also like about George Hill defensively is with that wingspan, he adds much needed length on the perimeter. And obviously now going against Toronto, contending with DeRozan and Lowry, that's going to be, kind of needed. But like you said, the back first and foremost, you can't really mess around with back injuries. If he's not completely healthy, we'll know it. Even look at Rodney Hood earlier in the season when he tried to come back, and it was pretty obvious just looking at him running that he was in pain. So really it is going to depend on how that back is feeling come Tuesday and Thursday. Going from there with him and seeing if he still needs that minute restriction.
What to you in his time on the floor was the most, aside from the ball handling, what about his game was important for Hill? What did you notice about his game that you saw him make an impact aside from just the supplemental ball handling, which I'm sure we've talked about a lot and we're going to keep talking about because I think it's just so important.
I think overall just, the shot attempts, having another guard that, is able to, I feel like he just didn't like skip a beat necessarily. You know what I mean? And yeah, obviously getting to the foul line was big. And some of those were gimmies at the end when they were, fouling on purpose, but having another person that's like LeBron, that's willing to attack and, sort of willing to get free throws, is huge. And you look at the free throw disparity this game, the Cavs made 31 compared to 19 for Indiana. So that's one of the big differences in this game 7. And George Hill was a big part of that.
Moving on from there, Kevin Love in this game, I think, had a bounce back game of sorts. He wasn't perfect in this game. He still struggled a little bit inside. I think he talked, and there's a quote that's going around about him just kind of being burnt out after the game a little bit. Got a little bit of foul trouble late in this game. It doesn't have the great pure raw rebounding numbers, but 4 of 7 from 3 or 4 of 8. I've seen it in two different box scores. I'm not actually sure which one was right. I believe it was 4 of 7. Didn't start out well. He had a really, really bad start. He had a missed shot inside, 2 missed threes, had a couple ugly misses later. And I don't, I think it's pretty clear that he's dealing with something with that offhand that's bothering him, but made threes in this game when they mattered. He got one early. He got one in the fourth quarter that I think really is going to go down as one of the most impactful plays of this game. That LeBron said after the game gave him another couple minutes to rest because they could push the Cavs' lead just, I think, back up to 7 or 8. Was a really big three. And look, Kevin Love has not been good in this series. I wrote about this, if you're the sort, about how they needed a lot more from him. They're going to need a lot more from him going forward. I think he needs to maybe even be better than 14-6. I think particularly offensively against Toronto, he's going to need to make those shots inside. But this was especially in that second half, I thought, and on the glass with Tristan, where he's not the only guy really battling for rebounds, I thought Kevin was great in a lot of ways, and I think this is a good sign for him coming out of his series where he's had a really, really tough time.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that fourth quarter for him, where, you know, he had 8 of his 14 points in that final frame, hopefully that's a sign of things to come and him maybe finding himself a little bit of a groove. You know, the hand, yeah, obviously that's still kind of questionable. And he mentioned last game getting hit in it again. You know, who knows at this point how the hand is or is not affecting him. But, I mean, it definitely has been odd, just his offensive production as a whole. And I think that fourth quarter could be a step in the right direction, because also who knows how much of it was just mental at this point for him. And, you know, knowing that he's not putting up the numbers and starting to feel that pressure, knowing that they need him as a second option. So I think tonight he obviously delivered in those early minutes of the fourth quarter when LeBron was on the bench. And like you said, that three giving LeBron some extra time to rest in the fourth quarter was really big. So, you know, against Toronto, and we can get into this a little more, it's your podcast and I'm hijacking it here, but when we talk about that matchup, you know, Kevin did a good job all year of taking advantage and kind of exploiting Valanciunas especially on the perimeter. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see with that hand if he still, you know, kind of is able to continue what he did in the regular season against Toronto in the next series.
We'll get into the Toronto series real quick here, but anything else from this game that you want to touch on? Anything else from this game that you're like, okay, I need to make sure I have something to say about how this game played out, how game 7 played out for the Cavs?
No, I think we hit everything major.
Yeah, I would just say Jordan Clarkson was really bad. I think Jeff Green was fine-ish. Somehow was a +5. But Jordan Clarkson, to me, was the one guy. Rodney Hood was invisible again. And Larry Nance was okay. He looked a little bit frustrated. And JR hit a couple threes. JR had a couple big threes in this game. Continued to play pretty well. A much better game for him than game 6, which bodes well, I would say, going forward. But looking at this Toronto series, that'll, again, start on Tuesday. Full coverage here and at FearlessSword.com all week. That game was... that series this year, I have a hard time taking away a lot of it. I think the big question, aside from the energy level, is what starting lineup do we see Ty use? I think there's a lot of options on the table. You know, as crazy as it is, considering how bad it went in game 1 of the series, Jeff Green seems like a candidate just because of the size on DeRozan. I think Hill has to start if he's good to go. I think Love at the 5 could go back to making sense because Valanciunas has no shot against him. The problem is kind of filling out the rest of that. Could they go back to the lineup we saw leading into Game 7 where it's LeBron, Korver, JR, you know, probably Hill and then Love? Could you go 2 bigs again? Could you stick with what we saw here with maybe Korver coming off the bench instead of Hill? I think there's a lot of options. I don't think we're going to know until I think it's like an 8:30 tip on Tuesday. We're going to find out we're going to find out just like today, like probably right before the game, because that's just how Ty rolls. But what if you were going to be in Tyler's shoes, Ashley, what would you do with the starting lineup for game 1 of that series?
Well, I think kind of alluding to what I was just talking to with Kevin, I think you kind of got to try out the starting lineup with him at the 5 and maybe bringing Jeff Green back into the fold, you know, regardless of, you know, he had an iffy series at best here. And, you know, if you have to bring him in, if you have to bring Hill in, instead of Korver or JR, you know, you maybe try that. But I really think Kevin at the 5, we need to see how it looks, how, if the hand is affecting him or if he's just still not in a rhythm, because he really does exploit Valanciunas. And what we saw in those last 2 games against Toronto especially is that the Raptors really just don't have a solution for when the Cavs spread the floor. And I think that that's also something, obviously, that we saw the Pacers struggle with later in this series when Ty decided to go with 4 shooters and LeBron, which is obviously something we've seen a lot over the past 4 years anyway. And I really think that I don't have a lot of hard and set feelings about what lineup he needs to use, but I would like to see Love at the 5 at least to start and just kind of go from there.
I agree, and I think if that goes badly, if Love has issues with the sides or some aspect of that matchup, Tristan's going to be there to come in immediately. It's not like you can't make a pretty early switch. Ty's done that before. He's typically a guy that does like to leave the starters in for a long chunk of the first quarter, but he's done the opposite of that before. It's certainly not out of the question that, you know, Ty could just make that switch real quick if he needs to. I think just considering DeRozan, I don't think it's a terrible idea to play Green, just because if you're not playing, the matchups for the series are going to get really tricky, because obviously you need Hill to guard Lowry, who is fantastic. LeBron, you're not going to ask him to guard DeRozan. I do think you're going to see LeBron on DeRozan in this series. I think it makes a lot of sense to, if LeBron's up for it, to go at DeRozan a lot. But I don't think you want to start with that. You don't want to ask him to keep doing that much. I think can you hire Kyle Korver on OG and Newby? Where are you putting JR? Can JR just handle DeRozan? He's done it in the past. Can you put LeBron on the Ibaka in that case and have Korver hide on OG? You could do that. I think the Raptors are going to move the ball well, and Korver's I think can probably handle a lot of what they could handle with OG. So I think that could be, if you're good with JR guarding DeRozan, I would probably go with that, with Hill, JR, Kyle Korver, LeBron, and Kevin Love. I don't think it's out of the question Jeff Green should. I think it's actually the one series I think Jeff Green kind of has some value, just because I do think him on DeRozan makes some sense. You do need somebody else to do it. And Hill, it's not like Oladipo where you could slide Hill over there and talk yourself into it being okay. DeRozan's just too big for George Hill. And LeBron and JR and I think Green are all going to see a lot of time on him. I also think Tristan's going to matter and Nance are going to matter in this series, because Toronto does have a good group of bigs. They have guys like Jakob Poeltl, like Serge, like Valanciunas, like Pascal Siakam that are going to do some work. And the Cavs are going to have to contend with these different types of bigs. And they're going to have to contend with the deep Toronto team. Fred VanVleet is back and is healthy. He's a very good backup point guard. And that's a very cohesive unit. The Cavs are going to get tested by that depth, I think. But I agree with you. I would start Kevin Love as a five. And that, to me, aside from the fatigue coming into the series, aside from just wondering how good this Cavs team actually is, I think that's the big, for in terms of pure basketball stuff, that to me is the big question about this Cavs team, is like, what is the best starting lineup for each series? And I do think you are going to see a lot of tinkering along the way. It just seems like it's inevitable that we're going to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I also agree that depth, I think, is going to be the Cavs' biggest problem against Toronto. You know, I think this was the game they had five guys in double figures in it. I don't think they had that the entire series until this game against Indiana. So that depth is definitely something that the Cavs are going to have to figure out an answer for. And obviously, I think they did a good enough job of it in the regular season against Toronto. And, you know, Ty mentioned in his post-game press conference that obviously this series against Indiana had been a tough one, and he feels like some of the younger guys and maybe the guys who weren't as experienced in the postseason have grown up a little bit because of it, so maybe that will be some sort of antidote. And then obviously going forward, other than that, the biggest concern for me is the third quarters, because we saw another third quarter collapse, another slow start. And I don't know where you are, Chris, but I'm to the point now where I'm like, maybe there isn't a solution to this problem, because the fact that they still haven't found it yet is beyond concerning at this point. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. And I can't even begin to wonder where it starts. I can't begin to wonder why no one has an answer for why it happens. But, you know, to see it again today and to see the game still break the Cavs' way, it felt like we were watching the season ending a little bit in today's game. And that was, you know, that is somewhat concerning going forward, just that we don't know why it's happening and no one seems to have an answer for why the third quarters are just so slow.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think, and especially in those moments where LeBron does sit, let's say end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter, where LeBron is most often going to sit, what does Toronto's depth give them? Is that an advantage where if the Cavs cannot piece together good minutes, you know, does that put the Cavs in a 6-point hole? A big reason why the Cavs won, I would argue game seven was in that start of the fourth quarter when LeBron, we don't really know what's going on with LeBron. And then he comes back out and sits for a little bit to rest and is eating oranges on the bench. The Cavs went, got up to double digits and a lead at that point. And then they take, there's a timeout. So LeBron gets another little break, and then the Pacers come on a little bit of a run. Kevin Love hits that three. LeBron gets this extra rest that he wasn't going to get otherwise. Can the Cavs do that against a Toronto team that has relied on that bench all year? If they can't, that's going to be a problem. I think the Cavs really, really need to win those, or at least battle even against those moments. It's always important, but against a team like Toronto that has the depth in the and has done that all year, that's just going to be one of the, I think, one of the key parts of the series.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And, you know, there is a lot of concern for me still going forward. Like, yeah, they won the series, and we can kind of put off some of those questions like LeBron's future and, you know, what exactly, where did this team fall apart? We can put that off for now. But I think it was Jason Lloyd that wrote in his, you know, final thoughts on The Athletic after game six, where even if they win game seven, part of you just feels like it's a stay of execution almost, which I think is a really great way to look at it, in that the Cavs, you know, they still have a lot of problems. And first and foremost, you know, we've said it so many different ways now, is the fact that somebody other than LeBron has to be able to do something consistently if they're going to beat this Toronto team. And, you know, there's the national narrative that the Cavs are in Toronto's heads and, you know, they can't, for whatever reason, get past LeBron. But there are some real problems that they basically have a day to address. And, you know, Toronto's obviously had more time off and is going to have, you know, more than their fair share of scouting when it comes to Cleveland and trying to figure out a way to stop LeBron. But there's still a lot of issues going forward that, you know, we need to keep an eye on. And those slow and lackadaisical moments are definitely, you know, first and foremost, why is this happening? Why don't we have depth to be able to really stop those kinds of moments from happening? And how do you contend with a really deep team on the other side? So all that stuff I'm going to kind of be watching out for going forward into the semifinals now.
As you'll wrap it up on this last bit, who is one of the Cavs, aside from Kevin Love, if you're going to look at one of the Cavs that has struggled in the Pacers series, I think we have talked about enough about how important Love is. You're going to look at the other Cavs that have struggled. Who would be the one, or have been limited to injury, or however you want to put it, who is one or two guys that you think, okay, they have to play a lot better in Toronto for the Cavs to have a chance? The Cavs, by the way, are 2-1 underdogs for in betting right now in that series. That they've opened up there, which is kind of crazy considering. But who's a one or two guys that you think have to just play a lot better if the Cavs are going to make it through Toronto, get to Eastern Conference Finals to play either the Celtics or the Sixers?
I mean, first and foremost for me, it's Jeff Green. I mean, we know how much Lou trusts him, which means he'll use him a lot more than probably he is right now. And, you know, I think he just adds athleticism. He adds somebody who can guard guards or go into the post. And he adds extra length against Toronto, who, again, is really deep. So I would like to see more from him. And as you said, we need Rodney Hood to not just fall into being invisible, because they are a lot better when they have him as an option to go to. And again, he's another, you know, versatile offensive player. So really for me, it's those two that can kind of, I think, take this team to the next level, depth wise at least.
Yeah, Hood is the one for me, because I think he's the one guy that I could create offense. It's the one thing he has the potential to be very good at. You know, I think if he can get rolling, that would be really big, and he should have a little bit of an easier time than he did against Indiana. I think Larry Nance just is going to be another guy. I think Tristan Thompson has to keep playing at something like this level. I think it'd be really big if he could sustain it. It'd be very impactful. Nance, I think, in a series where Toronto has a lot of bigs and is going to have guys that can get guys in foul trouble and are going to have just bigs where they're playing two big lineups, and the Cavs are going to have to, especially if Thompson plays a lot, are going to need to rotate these guys correctly. I think Nance, if he's playing 13 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game, whatever, I think just has to be better than he's been. But Ashley, that's going to be it. Thank you so much for recapping this game with me. And I don't know if you have one yet, but have you thought about what your prediction might be for Cavs Raptors. I'm not, if you don't have one, I don't have one yet. I'm not gonna ask you to make one if you don't have one, because I think I personally don't have one, but I keep already getting asked about it if I have one or not.
Yeah, I feel like LeBron, when he was at the end, was like, I have not thought about the next series. I am just tired and want to go home. And I already am home, but like LeBron, in my own way, I'm tired. Obviously not like LeBron in that I did not put up 45 points this afternoon for the Cavs. But yeah, I really haven't had time to extensively think that much about this next series, because obviously without winning game 7, there was going to be no next series. So no prediction for me just yet. I'm going to need some time to recover from this Indiana series that feels like has been going on for a month.
Yeah, I need a good night of sleep and just like a very strong cup of coffee when I wake up on Monday morning. But that's going to be it for today's episode of Locked on Cavaliers. Find Ashley on Twitter at AshleyBastock42. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. Find Locked on Cavs on Twitter at Locked on Cavs. And please go on iTunes, subscribe, and leave a 5-star rating and review. That is the best way to support this podcast. We'll have a full preview up tomorrow with Sean Woodley from Locked on Raptors and Raptors HQ. Going to be a really fun series. Very much looking forward to covering the ins and outs of Cavs Raptors and all the craziness that's going to happen in it. Third year in a row we've gotten it. It's going to be fun. But again, talk to you tomorrow. And thank you again for listening to Locked on Cavaliers.